Yeah, well, thank you so much for inviting me to your new place. It's a pleasure to be here. I think the last time that I actually saw you in person, I was going on my church fast. Do you remember that? Yeah, it would have been the beginning of March, just before COVID started, at least the lockdown started. And I had decided for Lent I was going to give up my least edifying habit, which was going to church. And before I knew it, the whole world had also followed suit. So, yeah, but here we are. Things are kind of, as they say, getting into the new normal. Thank you so much for asking me back. I really do appreciate. I love talking to this group of people because it is such an interesting group of people. I can't even imagine all of your stories and the things that kind of brought you, to this place here. I have been asked to speak about All Hallows Eve, where that fits within the tradition. And so, as you know, I've been clear in previous times that I've come from a Christian tradition, but a very mixed one. So I'm going to do my best to do that. But I want to introduce you to some of my ancestors first, because that's kind of what this is all about. So Mike, could you go to the next slide there? So this is what I did on the eve of All Hallows Eve. So yesterday morning, this time yesterday morning, you might recognize that this is the blanket exercise. Have any of you done the blanket exercise? Hands up to see. Okay, so a number of you know what it is. It is really quite an amazing teaching tool to, I think, to help people unlearn things that they may have learned about their colonial past. And it's a very carefully scripted and very emotional run through the last 500 years of history of Canada, of settler history, pre-settler history. And it's a very effective way to do this as well, by putting all these blankets out. And the blankets represent original homelands, right? And then as the colonial story unfolds, more and more of the blankets get taken away and the space becomes more and more crowded. People get isolated, children get taken away to residential schools, 60 scoops happen. And the third picture there, that gorgeous woman in gray, that's my wife. They take us through some role playing, and she was the last of the Beothuks. Have you heard of the Beothuks? The Beothuks were the people group that were indigenous to Newfoundland, and actually Newfoundland and beyond. But it is an actual example of not just like what, and people like to kind of soften it by calling it cultural genocide, but this is an actual genocide where the Beothuks were wiped out. And so it was very emotional. And I'll try not to get emotional right now, but my wife represented the last of the Beothuks, and then she had to. We were all, as we were kind of taken out of the center, we were told to go sit around the edge of the room and join our ancestors. So that's what this is all about. It's about our ancestors. The reading was about acknowledging our ancestors and who we are in the present, and then looking forward to what we will become to future generations. It was a very emotional morning, and I'm trying to hold it together too here. My Scottish side of the family, Scottish Presbyterian, to my knowledge, they weren't involved in residential schools, but none of that matters because we're all complicit in it. And so it was very emotional from that side of things. To know that the Scottish Duns, who were just poor farmers, they landed in a farming community, southern Manitoba, Spurling, Manitoba, And I've actually been to that old homestead. It's all overgrown now. But, you know, my dad still tells me stories. I'm very blessed to have both of my parents still with me. But I feel the conflict and the complicated relationship with my ancestors on that side. Because on the one hand, yes, I honor them, and I honor them for the courage, for setting up homesteads in a place like southern Manitoba, you know, and all that it took to do that in the dead of winter, you know, and without modern conveniences and all of that. But at the same time, I'm feeling all the things I think I'm supposed to feel about the colonial legacy of being being a descendant of Scots immigrants, right? So that was yesterday. Can you go to the next one? Today, now, someone had mentioned feeling weepy about the move. Today at 11:59 p.m., the title deed for my ancestors' property gets handed over to someone else. So my grandpa Hannison, Edward Hannison, came from the Faroe Islands. He was Icelandic, came by way of the Faroe Islands, and ended up for a time in Gimli, Manitoba, where all the rest of the Icelanders seemed to settle. And then he got a job on the railroad, and so he settled here in Port Arthur, and he bought a farm, well, big chunk of farmland, and then there was one original homestead on it, and it was a log cabin. And I lived in that log cabin for the first years of my marriage. When my wife and I first got married, we were there for a couple of years. It was tiny. We called it the Love Shack. And, you know, I'm so grateful for that. We had been talking about selling that property for a number of years, and we finally have. And that, too, is a very emotional thing. You know, as I'm realizing, the decision that my grandpa Hannison made when he bought that original land and the homestead, he had no idea how many families he was going to bless with that. How many, like four generations living on that property, you know, and I am so very grateful for my grandpa. And I never met him. He died before I was born, when my mom was still young. And my mom, out of grade 13, as it was called back then, had to get a full-time job to support the family, including her little brother. And she became a teacher, which was really the best career option open to her then. And she took over all of the bills and paid for, you know, the upkeep of the family home and the property. And so I just think about those generations. That's my brother and I. We're about as different as chalk and cheese, as they say. I'm not going to tell you which one's which, but he's a dear friend of mine as well, and sometime enemies back in the teenage years. But that's him and I. And we were dismantling the house, the last house remaining there. And part of the sale was that we could salvage anything on the property, because people were buying it were just going to just bulldoze it. But we took out all the windows and the furnace and the water heater and everything. And so that's what my brother and I have been doing for the last little while. So I think I'm thinking a lot about ancestors, those who have gone before, and feeling that mixed legacy of being very, like, honoring them for their courage, for their strength, for their generosity for generations to come. But at the same time, we have to call it evil of the colonial enterprise, of the malice and the wickedness of what it, like, we were hearing about children being taken away from families, and I can only imagine what I would have done if someone came for my kids, you know. And so the all of that swirling mix is how I feel about my ancestors right now. And I think that kind of captures the whole 3 days that are called the Triduum, the 3 days around All Hallows Eve, Hallow Mass, which is All Souls Day, or All Saints Day, and then All Souls Day. So October 31st, November 1st, and November 2nd. By the way, the text there, that is my grandpa's Icelandic Bible. And as I get up and read and sing the Psalms every morning, I imagine that my grandpa used to do that as well. And this is one of my prized possessions. There we go. All right. So this tradition of the 3 days, it really is a Western Christendom sort of tradition, from, you know, old Catholic roots. And I'm going to kind of bring it around to its kind of mixing with the Celtic tradition that my family's from as well, the Scottish. And I do have a bit of Irish as well. So the October 31st was what was known as the Vigil of All Hallows Eve. And it was kind of like, it's a bit compared to like Mardi Gras. You know, Mardi Gras is the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday, which begins Lent. And so it before the season of solemnity, there's this kind of this evening, this moment of you know, of mischief and partying and celebrating and that sort of thing. And but it's a deeper religious roots there is of preparing to remember the dead, preparing to remember those who came before us. And the big event on the 31st of October was the vigil at the church or the chapel, where people would say prayers on behalf of the dead, the departed. And the practice, and this is kind of an English tradition, was of both the poor and also children going around to the wealthier homes and singing this little song, a soul for a soul cake. Pray you, good mistress, a soul cake. And soul cakes were given out to the singers. And the promise was a little bit of a transaction. So the poor would get some coins and the children would sing this song as well and then go. And the promise was they would go and pray for the loved ones of the dearly departed of this home, right? So it was a little bit of a financial transaction here. You go to the next slide there. And that's the recipe for soul cakes, in case any of you are interested. Actually, my wife was thinking that we might try to bake some soul cakes today. I haven't yet tried some soul cakes, but it sounds pretty good, actually. Cinnamon and nutmeg and allspice. Yeah. Okay, and next slide then. The main event, of course, that was preparation for this one day that was to be observed by the whole church, the whole Western church, what was known as Hallow Mass. And this is more commonly known as All Saints Day. And the text that is usually read in this is to remind us of those who have gone before, but who are particularly the ones called saints. And from what I understand, around the 600s, this one day was observed to remember the saints. And it started off as a commemoration of the martyrs. And by the 600s, there were so many martyrs that they couldn't do one per day. So they decided to have it all on one day. And I think by around the 800s, the Pope then declared November 1st to be All Saints Day. And so Hebrews 12, therefore, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that's set before us. So those who have gone before, those saints that went before, are to give us courage to live well, to live right, and to keep going. Now, one of the traditions that I was reading about was that in the larger cities, there were statues of saints that they would process through streets. But in the smaller parishes and the poorer parishes, there were no such statues. So the kids used to dress up as the saints, right? So there's a little picture of some children in Ireland dressed up as the very, I think there's Teresa of Lisieux there and Teresa of Avila, and you can see Mother Teresa. So you got the three Teresas right there, and they all look about 7 or 8 years old. And I'm guessing that's Patrick there on the left. But yeah, this was the day to remember the saints that went before. But if you think about the saints as being like these pure, almost perfected people, right? It's hard to really imagine yourself kind of in that class. At least that's within the Catholic structure of things. Not just anybody could call themselves a saint, right? Now, in the most Protestant traditions, we would go by, you know, everybody who calls himself a disciple of Jesus could call themselves a saint, right? In some way, shape, or form. Still, high church would also have a kind of a separate category for saints. But the question then is, what do you do with all of us garden variety sinners that are in the process of being made holy? What do you do with all of us? Well, that's where you have the third day, which is the All Souls Day. Right, so the next slide there. And All Souls Day, let me go back one, yeah. Yeah, and All Souls Day usually involves, for those practicing this as a matter of religious devotion, going to the graveyards and lighting candles, setting flowers, and importantly, saying prayers for all those who have gone before. And, you know, I had there's a friend of mine who comes from a Catholic background. She texted me the other day to say, biblically speaking, what do we believe about my mother who has died? Because her mother died recently. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, I had the thought when I was walking in the woods, can my mother see me right now? And she said, because if she can, that makes me very uncomfortable. I can understand that, especially with a mother, you know. But she had a very kind of, difficult relationship with her mother. But then she said as well, it would also be very comforting to know that her mother has passed on somewhere else and that she is in some way alive, right? So I can't remember if I gave her a very satisfactory answer, but it was an interesting text exchange anyway. But really, it was wondering what happens to our dearly departed. Because not everybody who is dearly departed on good terms, right? And some people departed with a whole load of unfinished business, right? And left the living with a lot of baggage, right? And I know that that's probably true even in this room here. So that I can understand her feeling about that comfort, at the same time really uncomfortable about the idea of her mother being able to see her. Now, that's the Catholic side of things, and High Church Anglican as well. This is fairly prominently practiced as well all through the British Isles. Now, if you go to the next slide there, this is where it very interestingly coincides. I know it looks like it should be pronounced Samhain, but it's pronounced Samhain. And Samhain was one of the four quarterly holy days of the Celts, right? So the holy days of the Celts were Imbolc, Beltane, Lunesa, and Samhain. Right, and the way they fell in the Celtic year was they were right in the midst of, in between the equinox and the solstice, right? So the summer and winter solstices, where you know, you had the longest day for summer and the shortest day and longest night for winter, and then your equinoxes, equal day, equal night, right, for vernal and autumnal. And the Celtic sacred days, and they were usually practiced for a week, fell right in the midst, right in between the equinox and the solstice. So that's where we are, right here, which brings us to the end of October and into November. And so this is the celebration known as Samhain. And both, if I remember correctly as well, Beltane and Samhain were the ones that were all about lighting the fire, lighting the sacred fire. And so it would be a communal fire, right? So that's this picture here. So this is still being practiced. I think this picture I got off the web, obviously, but I think it was from Scotland. And you can see there's this central fire, the community is all dancing around and they're in their mummers' outfits, right? So the mummers would kind of, it looks almost like a ghillie suit, you know, it looks, it's really interesting. And sometimes it would be in a horse, like there was a headdress of a horse, and then, you know, someone would be under there acting like a horse. What I really love about the practice around Samhain is that it was this time of year that it was the harvest season, obviously, but everybody in the community would take an ember or something, a firebrand from the communal fire, and bring it back to the home and light the hearth fire. They would relight. They would snuff out the hearth fire and relight it for the new year. So it's kind of like a new year in a sense. But what I love about that is the connecting of the individual nuclear family home with the community, right? That it's the fire that connects. So there's a lot of, beautiful practice there as well. And so this is also coinciding with these Catholic, you know, celebrations around the 3 days. All right, next one. Now, it's also during this time, and this might be a particularly Irish, and to a certain extent Scottish as well, belief and significant amount of fear around the class of beings known as the Aoshi, which are kind of like it's a category, umbrella category to describe fairies, and that the one that's kind of in the center there, that is not an Aoshi, but a special kind of Aoshi called a Banshee, right? So these are the shrieking, screaming ones. And then there's also during this time as well for those practicing various forms of witchcraft, this is the Wiccan Sabbat. So there's a picture of, there's a old woodcut of some witches, and then the leprechaun there. There's a significant amount of fear around these. Now, remember back to my friend there who was very uncomfortable with the idea of her mom being able to see her and visit her and speak to her. A lot of people had that kind of fear as well, right? So what they would do is they would dress up like the Aoshi. They would dress up like the fairies, like the ghouls, the goblins, the ghosts, and the belief was that on the middle night of the week of Samhain, when the veil was the thinnest between the living and the dead, there it was like basically a permeable thing, right? The dead could pass through that veil freely. And so the living would dress up like the Aoshi in order to trick, to fool those departed ones, right? And now, if your dearly departed one departed in peace and in a state of grace, then then everybody's happy. They would set an empty seat at the table, right, for that. But if they departed with unfinished business and had malevolent hearts and yeah, we're kind of back to see a little bit of revenge. Then it was a very dangerous and also a very fearful time. So next, you can see the next slide there. So these are actual pictures of from the early 20th century of the disguises that families would wear during this night. And I don't know what it is, but old photos are just creepy. Like now, I mean, you see all the cute little kids coming around looking like Marvel comic book characters, you know, but that would be totally freaky to see, you know, especially at night. That central picture there, where they would also paint themselves up in blackface too, as well. I'm not really sure what's going on there. But all of that was to fool the spirits. And the other thing that happened was when they were pretending to be these spirits, it was just one small step away from actually pretending to do the things that spirits do. So it became known as the Night of Mischief as well, right? So that's the tricking or treating. That's all part of the package. Now, could you just go to the next slide there? There's another story where, and this is kind of like where the Catholic and the Celtic stuff kind of merges. According to tradition, St. Patrick went out on Samhain as himself, right? And there's a good Irish phrase when a friend calls you up and you say, "Oh, it is himself," right? You heard that? "It is himself." So he was going as himself. And what he was doing was he was trying to show, you don't have anything to fear. There's nothing to fear, right? So in going out barefaced as he was. Now, I don't know if this is true. There's so many stories about Patrick that who knows what's legend, what's truth, who knows, right? And according to the stories that I was reading, he passed out sweets to the children, right? Just to say, "I'm here. God is good. I'm not afraid. Here you go. Have a sweetie on me." Right? So maybe that's another part to the whole, you know, add that to the soul cakes and we might get some trick-or-treating there. But I want to just end with this famous ancient prayer. Next slide, please. This is known as St. Patrick's breastplate. And lorica is Latin for a breastplate, like what a Roman centurion would wear, right? And the idea was Patrick put on his spiritual armor and he went out into a very complicated world where we have all kinds of ambiguous and ambivalent feelings about the spirits and about the dead, those who have passed on, whether they're in a state of grace or not, even enemies, those who would oppose him. So now, I am so grateful that Unitarians are as liberal as they are, because you're not going to burn me at the stake for giving you a little bit of something Trinitarian here. At least I think I'm going to get away with this, but let's see. This will be a test. but I love Patrick is so badass. He really is. Like when, you know, if these words are attributed to him, "I bind unto myself this day, this invocation, the power of all the Trinity, Father, Spirit, Son, creator of elements, Lord of all creation, my faith in the threeness, confession of the one. I bind unto myself." So this is now he's kind of identifying himself with the Christ event. "I bind unto myself this day the incarnation, his baptism and cross, his burial in the grave, his resurrection power, unto his ascension, the power of his returning in the coming judgment day." Next one. And now here's where he invokes all of those who have gone before, right? Those spirits, as well as those ancestors, the all saints and the all souls. "I bind unto myself this day this mighty power, love of the seraphim and worship of the Lord, the obedience of angels, serving archangels, the hope of resurrection unto our great reward. I bind unto myself this day the prayers of fathers, the words of the prophets, apostles that proclaim, the witness of the faith, courage of confessors, the purity of virgins, and the deeds of righteous men. I bind unto myself this day all the strength of heavens. Now he's bringing in creation itself. He's invoking creation. The light of the sun, radiance of the moon, splendor of the fire, speed of wind and lightning, depth of the seas, stability of earth. I bind unto myself this day his power to guide me, his might to uphold me, and his wisdom to lead, his eye ever watching, ear ever hearing, his hand protecting, and his word that gives me speech. I bind unto myself this day. So now he's starting to say, okay, I know I live in a very dangerous world. I live in a place where there are physical enemies, where there are spiritual enemies, where there are those living and departed who might have some very big problems with me. I bind unto myself this day his shield to protect me. His host will save me from all the devil's snares, from vice, temptation, all who wish to harm me, though they be few or many, though they may be far or near. His power stands between myself and every evil. And I'm sure it would sound better with an Irish accent. Against every malice that's directed unto me, charms of false prophets, black arts of pagans, false laws of heresy, idolatries, deceit. And the next one. And now is when he kind of really, really gets down to brass tacks. I summon now this day. So he's put on all of his breastplate. Now I summon now this day against the spells of witches. So you can see the kind of world that Patrick lived in, right? And it is very much the world of that kind of mix of Samhain and the Triduum, right? The three days of the commemoration of the dead. Every incantation of the Smiths. Well, that's what happened to Morrissey and all the Druids. Sorry. Did you get anyone get that? All right. All the Druids, and against it was Patrick's fault they fell apart. Against all corruption in the heart of mortal flesh and all of the darkest knowledge enslaving souls of men. Protect me, Christ, today from. Can you imagine this guy had to pray this? Like if you get up in the morning and say, protect me from poisoning and burning. In your mighty power, protect me from all harm. Keep and guard me now from drowning and from wounding, so that there may come to me an abundance of reward. This guy, I told you, he's badass. But now here's the thing. Yes, he's badass towards malevolent spirits and malevolent human beings. But all that he wants the person in front of him to know is this: Christ be with me, Christ there before me, Christ behind me, Christ there within, Christ beneath me, Christ high above me, Christ at my right, Christ upon my left. And Christ in the heart of every man that thinks of me, Christ in the mouth of everyone that speaks, Christ in the eye of everyone that looks at me, Christ in the ear of everyone who hears. I bind unto myself this day this invocation, the power of the Trinity, Father, Spirit. And this is how it ends. Creator of elements, Lord of all creation, my faith in the threeness, confession of the one. So that was the best that I could do to explain the very complicated mix of traditions that All Hallows Eve is and where it fits with the Day of the Dead, the commemoration of the dead. And I do want to be like Patrick and say, there's nothing to fear. Fear not, but also honor all those who have come before. All right. That's what I've got. I have no idea how long I spoke.